This podcast is sponsored by Canaccord Genuity Wealth Management, award-winning wealth managers who go above and beyond to support and guide you. Visit candowealth.com to start building your wealth with confidence.
Hello and welcome to the Saturday edition of Coffee House Shots. I'm Cindy Yu and I'm joined by Katie Balls and James Forsyth. So after the Conservatives' very good local election results last week, they've tried to redefine what it means to level up and redefining themselves as a Northern party. But that's left some people, especially in the South, a little bit peeved. Katie, can you explain what's been going on in the party in terms of the starting fractures?
Yes, well, if we go back to 2019 when Boris Johnson won that majority of 80, very quickly the rhetoric coming from the Prime Minister and Downing Street was all about the blue wall, formerly the red wall, and the level up agenda, which I think is very much imagined, you know, when it was first come up with a focus on the Midlands and the North, and this idea of making sure that these parts of the country can enjoy the prosperity that you find in the bigger cities in the South. Now, levelling up is not exclusive to the Midlands and North, but it is clearly how this policy agenda came about. Now, I think that just back then, I remember, you know, this is before the pandemic, but the gripe you were getting from some MPs was, you know, how are you ever going to get any money from the Treasury if you don't have one of these new seats, which the Prime Minister is staking so much on? So if you're, you know, a Southern MP, if you're in a home county seat, they'll feel that as though they're rather out of vogue. I think that this is rearing its head once again, because if you look at the local election results we just had, particularly on the Friday, really, you know, positive headlines, positive results for the government in terms of increasing that hold in the Midlands and the North. Lots of people said it might just be a fluke reaction to have former Labour voters vote Tory. It now seems as though actually, rather than actually, you know, just hold it, they're building on that. So you have Hartlepool by election, the Tories won by a very comfortable margin. You have the Tees Valley Mayor, Ben Houchin, who won a ridiculous majority, you know, over 70%. West Midlands, tighter, but, you know, the Tories again, strong there. And I think that that was quickly seen as, you know, a big cause for celebration. But as the results trickled through over the course of the 4 days we were getting them, there were hints of, you know, warning signs, concern for the Tory party in the South. So you look at Cambridgeshire, you look at Surrey, and, you know, losses, Tories losing seats on councils. Cambridgeshire mayor, Tory candidate, lost that to Labour. That was a big surprise. I spoke to Tory MPs who said, you know, if you had told me that, you know, weeks before, I said, I just don't believe you. And Chipping Norton went Labour. I think that's been bubbling for some time. But I think the broader picture is lots of these home county style seats or commuter belt seats where it has often been seen to be very Tory safe seats for a long time. There appears to be a more organised anti-Tory vote and some grumbles from traditional Tory voters. And those results means that the MPs representing it are growing a little bit nervous, about the fact that when the Prime Minister speaks, he's always talking about the North, and two, about what the government's legislative agenda, which you saw in the Queen's speech, is going to mean, particularly planning.
Yes, let's talk a little bit about housing, Katie, because as you write in your eye paper, this has spooked some people, especially in the southern parts of the party, about housing reforms and where they're going to build. We heard about the dreaded algorithm last year, but it seems like the government hasn't given up on those plans.
Yes, in the Queen's speech, we've been promised a drastic shakeup of planning laws, the most drastic for 70 years, something that James also touched on in his Times column today, on Friday. And I think that this is always going to be controversial. You've heard about NIMBYs, not in my backyard, but I think the problem for the government is the people who are going to be concerned about this feel they have more reason to voice their concerns, because actually, if you speak to MPs on the ground in some of these places like Surrey, they will say, well, planning is a big issue for me. And they think it's a perfect storm in the sense that if you build more homes, you potentially bring Labour voters in, which can whittle down, you know, change the demographic, whittle down your majority. And then in the process, they often say the Lib Dems on the local level in the area will criticise the planning, you know, say these shouldn't be built, and then they can take the traditional Tory voters from the Tory party. But so you get squeezed both ways. I think, as I think James will be about to say, there is obviously a convincing argument as to why it's important for the Tory party generally and the government to be behind big planning reforms to fix the housing crisis. But I think in terms of that divide, we're going to see more of it.
James?
I think Katie is right about the short-term pincer movement that worries these MPs. I would put it a tiny bit differently, which is, I think one of the things that is going on is you get a double squeeze. So you get people who you might think of as natural Tory voters, but they're cross that they can't afford to buy a house, and so they aren't voting Tory. And then you've got people concerned about the prospect of development, and they are voting for residence groups or Liberal Democrats who are kind of opposing those planning changes. Now, I think the Tory party need to think medium to long term rather than in the shortest of terms. So because 86% of Tory seats have higher than the national average level of home ownership, the single thing that is most likely to change people's politics is owning a home.
Even in today's red wall politics.
Yeah, I mean, one of the reasons why the Tories are doing so well in those red wall seats is because home ownership has been rising there. Hartlepool, which the Tories won in a by-election, the home ownership rate is 59%, right? And you look at what Peter Mandelson said this week, he was making the point that private ownership of homes has changed the nature of a constituency from the place that he used to represent. He said he went canvassing around these big estates, which he used to deliver large votes for him when he was the MP, and he found that home ownership, the fact that many more people now in these estates own their own homes, had changed their voting pattern. And I think this is the point, that the Tory party is a party of the property-owning democracy, or it is nothing. And I think there is a Tory view that young people, right, oh, you know, that problem, you know, as people get older, they shift their voting pattern, and that is right. If that didn't happen, we'd have permanent Labour governments. But the thing, I think, that makes people shift their voting pattern is becoming a homeowner. If people either becomes later and later in life, or they don't do it at all, I don't think those people's politics will change. Now, I think Katie is right about the concern among Tory MPs, but what I would argue is they need to do planning reform now, while their majorities in most of those Surrey, Oxfordshire seats is large enough to absorb the dissatisfaction with that from people who don't like the idea of more homes being built there. Because if you wait, that block of people who are cross that they can't get on the housing ladder will get bigger and bigger and bigger. And that wave will ultimately bring down the Tory majorities in those places. This is the challenge of what you've got to do. Two things that the government needs to do a lot more of. One is you need to break the oligopoly of the big developers. And I think that is going to require far more government direct commissioning of small builders to try and increase competition in the sector. The second thing I think you need to do is to ensure that land with planning permission gets built out. Mm. And the other thing you've got to do is ensure that you deliver the necessary infrastructure to go alongside this. And I think there is a point. You need to ensure that the local people in these places, when there is more housing built nearby, see a benefit. So, I think, for example, making clear that if a village has more houses added to it, you're going to reopen the village school, you're going to bring back the GP surgery, or this housing means that we're going to keep an A&E at this hospital. You've got to make sure that the existing residents feel some benefit from the new housing.
And Katie, these MPs who are unhappy, and Theresa May, for example, is one of the faction, what suggestion do they have for solving the housing crisis? Because clearly it's been this sword and a stone for a long time. So if not building in places that have low housing density, how do they propose we solve this crisis? Do they have any ideas?
Well, Theresa May said the wrong homes in the wrong places. And I think that sums it up, which is generally speaking, they will say, oh, yes, 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 no, supply is an issue. You need to build houses. But then we go back to not in my backyard, NIMBY. And therefore, when you saw the revolt over the housing algorithm a while ago, that was because they felt it disproportionately was going to come into areas where the housing would be more disruptive. And you've also seen the government say that they will focus it more on, you know, cities where they think, you know, housing will do better or perhaps face less resistance. So I think that they would say housing is important, but, you know, actually it wouldn't be so much better going in Bishop Auckland. Wouldn't that be great? And I think that's more the thrust of it. I also think that, generally speaking, lots of these blue wall MPs are more pro-housing. Sometimes they will play it both ways. I think if you are a Tory MP and you have a Labour council, you can almost be pro-housing on a national level. But if there are local complaints, almost blame the Labour council. So you can see a bit of that going on. But I do think there's a general sense in these places that actually housing is seen as less of a, you know, a toxic issue. In terms of general solutions, I think that one of the things lots of actually MPs in more seven seats talk about is the cost of renting. I know rent controls is a Jeremy Corbyn style, seen idea, but you see what's happening in New York. And when we had Natalie Elphick on the Album of Balls housing panel, chuck that one in, available on all podcast sites, she was actually making the point that you are not going to be able to help get people on the housing ladder until you have a situation where rents are lower, because that's actually part of the squeeze. So I think while supply is seen as an important aspect, you get some division and debate in the Tory party over whether it's the most important and whether there are other steps that would get you on the way. And also they'll point to these 5% mortgages you can now have in terms of your deposit, so 5% deposits, and say that's something that will help more people on. But I think more broadly with the North South Divide, I mean, planning is one aspect of it. There are other ways it comes up, I think, on cultural issues, cultural wars, and so forth. And I think that as we potentially, Indian variant pending, move away from an emergency sense of the pandemic, we're going to start seeing more domestic issues discussed and it come up in other ways.
And James, finally, speaking of cultural issues, how much of this, I mean, housing is one flashpoint, but how much of this is a start of things to come as the Conservative Party becomes more of a Northern party? And actually, you know, is that even a valid question? Because is there that much of a divide between the North and the South, you think?
I think there is a resources competition, I think, as Katie said. You talk to lots of Tory MPs and activists about the local, if you call around the people who represent places where the Tories didn't do so well in the local elections and lost councillors, what you hear from a lot of them is that southern voters hear levelling up as levelling down them. And they essentially hear all this and think, well, I quite like some money to improve our roads, our this, our that. And it's kind of classic competition for scarce resources stuff. And I think there's an interesting thing, which is that will obviously, economic growth will ease some of that. But I think there's that tension, and there is a kind of slight sense of being taken for granted that people don't like. And so I think we'll see a bit of that. There's an interesting question, which is, the idea of levelling up appealed to Boris Johnson as a concept, because as Mayor of London, he kind of argued against the idea that the best thing to do was to kind of take things out of London and send them to the rest of the country, and that would help. And so I think he will probably need at some point to kind of show the South some love as well. But I think this is kind of an interesting question, which is, we are expecting the fastest economic growth this year that we've seen in the post-war era. And so far, all the signs are that it is going to be the same old economic growth that the UK has had in recent decades, which does disproportionately benefit the South rather than the North. And so it is an interesting question as to whether that begins to affect how people think. I think it is just worth noting in the context of this discussion that house prices are rising at their fastest monthly rate in 17 years. And I wonder whether in a year's time, if we're back to people, using their houses as kind of ATMs almost. And so I think that is probably right. But I think, as Katie said, it is that one of the things that is driving it is the sense that there's no point in kind of bidding for money for projects in your patch, because it's all, and voters are picking up on this sense, because it's all about the red wall. And I think there's probably going to have to be some kind of tonal shift there. I think one thing the Tories benefit on, something that Katie touched on in our column, is that it's not entirely clear who the opposition to the Tories are in some of these places. In some of these places, it is clear, it's obviously the Liberal Democrats. But if you look at, for example, some of the London seats the Tories held or won back at the last election, Kensington, cities of London and Westminster, there the Tories benefited from the fact that the Labour and Lib Dem vote split. And if you look at the kind of rise in the Greens, and if you look at Cambridgeshire, where the Tories lost overall control of the council, what did for them there was essentially an informal Lib-Lab electoral pact, with the Lib Dems standing down in the city and Labour standing, or Labour basically not campaigning in the countryside. That is the kind of thing that would endanger the Tories if there was more electoral cooperation between Labour, the Lib Dems and the Greens. But I struggle to see that, because these parties are competitive. Just look at how in the London Assembly, the Lib Dems, the Greens and the Tories have got together to deny Labour the chairmanship of various committees. But I think it is probably, on Katie's point, it is probably a tonal shift as much as anything.
And I think the other challenge for Boris Johnson when it comes to the voters in the South is that I don't think many Tory MPs think they're about to, lose the next election because this is such a problem. But one of the issues from the local elections is I think this sense that this is a new government under Boris Johnson does much better in the Midlands and North, where in a way it is a new government because it's the first time these seats have gone blue. So it feels new and it feels like a new regime. Whereas what I've heard several times from MPs in the South is the fact is, well, to be honest, here it feels like it is a 10-year-old government. Mm. And that comes with all the baggage and the gripes that slowly build up. And how do you have a message which absorbs some of that?
Katie and James, thanks very much. And if you enjoyed this podcast, do subscribe, review, and tell your friends about it. Thanks for listening.